Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Kremlin Letters, Stalin's Wartime Correspondence with Churchill and Roosevelt. Edited by David Reynolds and Vladimir Pechetnov, with the assistance of Iskander Magadeyev and Olga Kucherenko. Narrated by James Cameron Stewart. I think I can personally handle Stalin better than either your Foreign Office or my State Department. Stalin hates the guts of all your top people. He thinks he likes me better, and I hope he will continue to do so. Roosevelt to Churchill, 18th March 1942. If only Stalin and I could meet once a week, there would be no trouble at all. We get on like a house on fire. Churchill, conversation with Colin Coote, 27th January 1944. In the history of diplomacy, I know of no such close alliance of three great powers as this, when allies had the opportunity of so frankly expressing their views. Stalin, Yalta Conference, 8th February 1945. Introduction. They were three most unlikely musketeers, the offspring of an English lord and an American heiress, passionate in his defence of hierarchy and empire, a secretive squire from the Hudson Valley, progressive in politics and obsessed with European imperialism, and a cold-blooded ex-terrorist, now determined to build up his power and that of his country in a hostile world. Yet, for nearly 4 years, the Big Three led one of the most effective alliances in history, and against the odds in the winter of 1941-42, achieved victory in 1945 over Hitler's genocidal regime and its allies in Rome and Tokyo. What is more, each member of this implausible trio became intrigued by the others and genuinely tried, in his distinctive way, to build personal relationships. As this book will demonstrate, their diplomatic triangle helped shape the outcome of the Second World War. Winston Churchill, Franklin Roosevelt, and Joseph Stalin exchanged 682 messages between the 22nd of June 1941, when Hitler invaded the Soviet Union, Operation Barbarossa, and Roosevelt's sudden death on the 12th of April 1945. Some are lengthy policy documents or chatty news bulletins about the battlefronts. Others are brief acknowledgements or lists of supplies. The Kremlin Letters prints their most important exchanges in full, some 75% of the total, especially those revealing the characters of the three men and their plans to meet, as well as exchanges on central issues such as the Second Front, the Arctic convoys, and post-war spheres of influence. All the messages will appear later in an online edition. The Big Three's correspondence was first published by the Soviet government in 1957, in Russian and in an English-language translation that was both comprehensive and accurate. The work had been initiated by Stalin himself in 1950 as part of his campaign to rebut the Western falsifiers of history. But in late 1951, with publication imminent, the project was suddenly dropped and did not appear in print until the Khrushchev era, under the editorship of Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko. Perhaps it has been speculated, with a little polishing of the English text by two former Cambridge graduates, then resident in Moscow, Guy Burgess and Donald MacLean. That the USSR was the first to publish the original documents, and so accurately, does not fit Western Cold War stereotypes about the secretive, manipulative Soviets, but Moscow was anxious to offset the selective use of Stalin's letters by Churchill and other Western war memoir writers and their failure to acknowledge the huge Soviet role in defeating Hitler. Nevertheless, the documents were published raw, with very little background, even from the Russian side. it is now possible to place the messages in their full international context, drawing on the archives of all three governments, especially recently opened Russian material from the Stalin archive and the files of the Foreign Ministry, and also private letters and diaries. The project database of some 5,000 documents includes the drafts of each message, records of discussions about them among advisers or in meetings such as those of the British Cabinet, and comments by the relevant ambassadors about how the messages were delivered and received by the three protagonists. In this way, the correspondence opens a multiplicity of windows into the diplomacy of the war. To reveal this, the volume therefore links the original messages in a connective editorial commentary to illuminate their full significance. The story unfolds in chronological chapters, each of which begins with a brief overview of the months in question. Messages and commentary together offer vivid insights into the diplomacy of what Churchill called the Grand Alliance and Roosevelt the United Nations, and even more into the personalities of three remarkable but very different leaders whom the world crisis of 1940-41 had thrown together. Churchill and Roosevelt were both quite open about their desire to build a personal relationship with the hitherto reclusive Soviet leader. Stalin also relished his new position at the top table of international politics and was excited by the challenges of playing against and with his US and British interlocutors at a decisive juncture in history. Although some of the messages exchanged seem factual and formulaic, many were politically sensitive and highly personal. The various national archives reveal the care that all three leaders took over composition, mulling over what to say, when to say it, and in what tone, and then waiting anxiously for the response. That is why we also reproduce the more significant alterations that they made in successive drafts. For the benefit of purists, it should be noted that there does not exist what could be called the definitive text of a message. Not only were they translated from one language into another, Churchill once bemoaned to his cabinet how the tone of the original was often lost in the process of translation, but most of them were also transmitted as secret telegrams, which meant enciphering and then deciphering the words. In the process, not only were synonyms substituted for the originals, but the word order was also routinely jumbled up to reduce the danger of ciphers being cracked by access decryptors. In a few cases, mistranslation caused misunderstanding and even offence, as when the English word diversion in one of Churchill's letters in October 1943 was erroneously transliterated in the Kremlin as diversia, Russian for subversion or sabotage. This volume therefore prints the versions of the messages that were sent or received in English by Churchill and Roosevelt, even though the translation from the Russian was often rough, especially in the case of the Soviet embassy in Washington in 1943-44, as Andrei Gromyko was finding his feet as the new ambassador. The point, however, is to see Stalin's letters in the form in which they were presented to the President and the Prime Minister. To some readers, all this might seem an exercise in desiccated textual criticism. It is therefore worth spelling out what was at stake, especially for the benefit of those from the Facebook generation. In an era before mobile phones, emails, Skype, and social media, and in a world where war had made international travel hazardous, telegrams were the prime means of communication. This was the only way that three unlikely allies could get the measure of each other. In fact, Roosevelt and Stalin did not meet in person until 29 months after the onset of Barbarossa at Tehran in November 1943. Their second encounter, and the last, was at Yalta in February 1945. Even the peripatetic Churchill had just four sets of meetings with Stalin, the Tehran and Yalta summits, plus his solo visits to Moscow in August 1945.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?